Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, November 15th. I don't know if you saw this story over the weekend. It was a marginal story in the U.S., bigger in the U.K. As the NBC News headline reported it, Richard Ratcliffe, husband of woman detained in Iran, ends 21-day hunger strike. Why was this dad with a seven-year-old at home and a wife in another country detained on a hunger strike? Well, the story says Ratcliffe was pressuring the British government to secure the release of his wife, UK charity worker Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, who has been detained in Iran since 2016 on charges of plotting to overthrow the Iranian government. Now, human rights groups say it's a trumped-up charge, like others against dual UK-Iran citizens, meant to bring ransom or political leverage. And apparently, she just got sentenced to another year just for taking part in a protest in the UK outside the Iranian embassy back in 2009. So her husband in the UK began the hunger strike that he ended on Saturday. He said he gave it up because he wanted to end it with his head held high, not in an ambulance. He had begun to get worrisome pains in his feet, he said, after not eating for 3 weeks. And he said their daughter, age 7, needs him alive. So there was that from over the weekend. And maybe you heard the story last week about 5 young climate activists who ended their hunger strike outside the White House after President Biden at the COP26 climate summit promised to significantly cut greenhouse gas emissions in the United States by 2030. When that strike was a week old in late October, one of the 5, Kiddush Girma, 26, a climate activist and organizer, told CNN that a doctor who had been monitoring the strikers sent him to the emergency room for nausea, dizziness, and blurred vision. So CNN showed Girma and his fellow strikers using wheelchairs to keep them steady. Another member of the group, Abby Leedy, just 20 years old from Philadelphia, described to NPR the physical pain that she felt 5 days into her climate hunger strike.
My hips and my knees were in so much pain, and I just curled on the floor, crying.
So there was that. And one more for the moment. You probably heard that about a dozen New York City taxi drivers had been on a hunger strike for about 2 weeks when the city agreed to a better deal to help them pay back their medallion loans, who, as you probably know, their value had crashed largely due to city policy, throwing many drivers' lives and families into desperate straits. So just in the last 2 weeks, these 3 hunger strikes have made global news headlines. Taxi drivers were heard all over the world, not just in Times Square. And there are several others going on right now around the world as well. Remember the anti-Putin dissident Alexei Navalny? He went on a hunger strike earlier this year. That was in the news for the way he was being treated in prison. Quite a move for a guy the Russian government apparently tried to poison to death last year. Those of you who are old enough may remember Bobby Sands, who died from a hunger strike in 1981 protesting British rule over Northern Ireland. The most famous hunger striker in human history may well have been Mahatma Gandhi. 18 of them, sometimes called fasts, sometimes called hunger strikes, to protest British rule over India. There was the time that my next guest has written about that a team of prison guards forced a feeding tube down the throat of the British suffragist Sylvia Pankhurst when she was hunger striking for a woman's right to vote. Mahatma Gandhi, Bobby Sands, Sylvia Pankhurst in the past, these hunger strikers in the news just right now. Why hunger strikes? Why now? With me now, Sharman Apt Russell, who wrote extensively about hunger strikes in her book, Hunger, An Unnatural History. Her latest book is Within Our Grasp, Childhood Malnutrition Worldwide and the Revolution Taking Place to End It. Sharman, so nice of you to join us. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
What's a hunger strike and how is it different from a fast? I think Gandhi often called his fasts.
Right. Well, a hunger strike is really looking for an audience. It's using your body, the fragility of the body, to go without food, to get attention from someone, to change someone's mind, to make something happen through your own suffering and through your own willingness to suffer and potentially die. And so you are striking against someone to get attention for a cause. A fast, you know, we fast for spiritual reasons. We fast for health reasons. You are similarly going without food, but you don't necessarily need an audience. You're doing it for yourself, or you're doing it for some other reason than to gain attention for a political or social injustice.
So what Gandhi did 18 times, you would call those all hunger strikes?
I would, yes.
There's a difference between drawing attention to your suffering and actually being willing to die. Why are some hunger strikers actually willing to die?
Well, I think those who are willing to die are at the point where they have very little options left. I mean, they are truly the powerless. So that often happens if you're in prison or if you're oppressed in such a way that you would rather die than endure these conditions anymore, or you would rather die than have that injustice perpetuated in the world. And there's really very few options left to you except to offer up your body and your suffering all the way to death.
Does it seem to you there are more hunger strikes in the news recently than there usually are? That's sort of the premise of this segment.
Well, there's a lot of hunger strikes in the news. There have been for a long time. In the 20th century, we saw an enormous amount of hunger strikes because the suffragettes, because of Gandhi, because they were so successful. But I think you have to say that social media allows for an even greater success in a hunger strike. So the more you can get attention, and now you can get world attention, you know, things can go viral, things can be heard all over the world. People have cell phones and people have access to the internet all over the world. So in that sense, yes, I think that this huge movement of hunger strikes that started in the 20th century, which we used to call kind of the renaissance of hunger strikes, that's just grown even more in the 21st century.
So there's social media. Do you think the number of hunger strikes recently is also an indication that we're living in extreme times, or that movements against injustice and for the climate protection are becoming more determined?
Well, I think we are living in extreme times. People have always believed that. In this case, you know, you look at these climate activists, you know, you're 18 or you're 20, you are going to be alive in the world in 2060, in 2080. You know, the older generation, we're not, and we can hardly imagine what that's going to look like. But those young people have to imagine it, and it is extreme. I think it's more, based on science, more extreme than you know, we've ever seen before.
I think your main interest, from what I've read of your work, is in involuntary hunger, malnutrition in history and today, from poverty and unjust distribution of wealth in the world. Why did you include hunger strikes, which are voluntary, in the book in which you did?
Right. Well, hunger in the human body is pretty fascinating. And I first wrote about it as a very dark subject. I realize there's a lot of light to that dark subject. Again, fasting for health, fasting for spiritual reasons. And I find tremendous inspiration in fasting for social justice. So that is kind of that tipping point of moving from voluntary hunger, where we're using our hunger for something, hunger for health, hunger for spirituality, hunger for social justice. At that point, midway in the book, it tips over into involuntary hunger. But I actually found that chapter on hunger strike kind of a marvelous thing to write. I'm inspired by people who are, it works as a metaphor. We hunger for something. We hunger for justice. And it's so literal, too, to put that powerlessness of the body against something so powerful. It is the David and Goliath story, or it can be, to pit your fragility against the state or against something as big as global warming. I find it really affirming in a strange way that people will do this.
You wrote about the effects of hunger strikes on the body. We played the clip of climate hunger striker Abby Leedy after just 5 days, a woman 20 years old, and I described a couple of the others. Are there certain ways that they tend to go physically?
Well, it so much depends on how what your body is before the strike. So if you're young and you're healthy and you have a lot of, you have enough fat in your body and you're well nourished with vitamins and minerals, you really can strike for, go without food for as long as 2 weeks without any kind of serious repercussions. But no one knows. Your body could suddenly respond badly to a hunger strike in the third day or the fifth day. It's very individual.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Imar in Pound Ridge, who says they went on a hunger strike 50 years ago. Imar, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I just wanted to say that 50 years ago, I was a student at Maynooth University in County Kildare, Ireland, and a group of us went on hunger strike for 2 days, 48-hour hunger strike outside the British Embassy in Dublin to protest against internment without trial, which was brought into Northern Ireland just a few months earlier. So we did a protest outside the British Embassy. I don't know if it changed anything, but we were young and felt that we needed to protest.
I mentioned Bobby Sands in the intro, the Northern Ireland hunger striker who actually died in 1981. Were you aware of him at the time?
Yeah. I had just come back to Ireland. I had been teaching in Nigeria, and I just came back to Ireland in 1980, and he was among the 8 hunger strikers over that period of time. He was the first one to die. And interestingly, he was elected as a member of parliament for Fermanagh in Northern Ireland, and the British government had to lower the flags to half staff over the Houses of Commons because he was a sitting MP. Obviously, he didn't sit because he was in prison, but he was a member of Parliament of the British House of Commons.
And looking back, what role do you think any of the hunger strikes played in the ultimate Belfast Agreement for the status of Northern Ireland?
Well, I think with Bobby Sands and the other protesters, the British government eventually relented. What they were striking for was that they were striking because they said they were political prisoners, that they weren't common criminals. And the Prime Minister at the time was Margaret Thatcher, and she wouldn't recognize their right to be political prisoners. And so they first of all went on what was called the dirty protest, where they just wouldn't, use the bathrooms and went on what was called the blanket. They wouldn't wear the issued uniforms from the prison, and then they went on hunger strike. So it eventually, it brought about, obviously, a lot of attention, not alone in Ireland, but in the United States. And ultimately, I think it weakened the British hand. And, I mean, it was many years later, but it did serve its purpose. And that wasn't the only one. Obviously, we did a lot during the Irish fight for independence back in 1919, 1920. The Lord Mayor of Cork also died back in those days of hunger strike in prison in Britain. So there's a history of it in the Irish struggle.
Thank you so much for your story, Imar. I really appreciate it. What were you thinking as you listened to those pieces of history, personal and more broadly, Professor Sharman, Professor Russell?
Right. Well, those are some of the great successes, the Irish Republicans and the women suffragettes, and achieved Well, one thing I was thinking is the Irish Republican prisoners were fasting for something very specific, to be seen as political prisoners, not common, you know, convicts. And that's one part of a successful strike, is to have something very specific in mind, and also to have a kind of history of injustice around it that people can immediately recognize. But I was also thinking of Mahatma Gandhi, what he said about fasting. I fasted to reform those who love me. And that was not particularly true of the British with the Irish at that time, the Irish political prisoners. But I think it's certainly true of the climate activists now. It's a communication not only to who you're fasting against, but it's also all those Irish people at that time who loved those prisoners and what they stood for, and all of us who love our young people and what they stand for.
Historically, when do hunger strikes work, and when do they not, to bring about the political results they're looking for?
Well, I think there has to be, well, first you have to get attention. You know, the prisoner who is, and I think there are probably people striking all over the world who are not getting attention. Someone has to care, and, you know, they can care because they are ashamed by you. They can care because they suddenly feel pity for you. They can care because they feel threatened by you, by your death, or and it can be one prison guard, or it can be an entire country, but it has to be an act of communication. You know, you have to reach someone. So it's not going to be successful if you're not reaching anyone. And that's why newspapers and social media and radio, public attention, you know, is so important to the success of a hunger strike. I think it has to also be successful. It has to have a specific goal. It can't be just to end war. But it has to be a specific action from a government or from an institution or from whom you're striking against.
Julie in Hastings on the climate hunger strikers. Julie, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much. And thanks for doing this segment. The young people in D.C. brought such attention. I just kind of wish that the media had covered them more while they were striking. But I wanted to do a shout out to my member of Congress, Jamal Bowman, who stood literally next to them and did a video and posted it while they were doing their action, and was quite eloquent in that clip. The other thing is, I thought, well, maybe this wouldn't be so relevant, but that is to say that one of the five young people is Catholic and did it out of his Catholic faith, I thought, but Catholicism's already come up here. And it reminds me of the fact that the ways in which Catholic policy, official Catholic policy going back 60 years, is with the progressives on things like climate change, not with the progressives on gender issues. It's complicated, but in that sense, it is. And then also your conversation with the author mentioning Cesar Chavez. Of course, Chavez was doing it for a labor issue, and he broke his fast at Mass with Bobby Kennedy. So again, you know, that just that angle on it of the Catholic Americans who do it for things like labor rights and environmental rights.
Right, and flowing from their Catholicism, not in spite of it. Julie, when you said at the beginning that you wish the media had given more coverage to the D.C. climate hunger strikers, do you play that out in your head as how that might have gone or what it might have changed? If we assume that there is already a lot of attention to the climate, I know a lot of people would say the media are not covering the climate enough, and I would generally agree with that. But COP26 was going on. There was attention to that, and the hunger strikers were on their fast at the same time. What do you think that would have changed in the public's mind? Would it have made people who are unsure about how far climate policy should go to change our energy systems, things like that, think more sympathetically about it? What? How do you think coverage of the fact that here are five people on a hunger strike would change anything?
I think when you say there's sentiment, you know, it would start to change. It would affect people's hearts, I think, more. These young people that a lot of us suburbanites, they would remind us of the kids in our suburbs. And I think it would touch people's hearts such that people who are, I think it's overblown, it might affect them a little, but I think more those of us who, you know, might help us get off our duffs a little bit more, mm-hmm. and maybe call Congress or something.
Good stuff, Julie. Thank you very much for your call. It must be morally as well as politically complicated to decide to force feed against their will somebody who's on a hunger strike against your government's policies.
That's a really complicated situation, yes. You know, the World Medical Association says that force feeding and a hunger strike is unethical. The American Medical Association is part of that, larger body. But in America, for example, the Bureau of Prisons says, no, we are responsible for people in our prisons. We're responsible for their health. And so if they go on a hunger strike, say against prison conditions, it's our legal right and our responsibility even to force feed them. So there's, you know, every hunger strike is different. And you have to make sure that a hunger striker is lucid and knows what he or she is doing, knows the risk. So I think the question for a doctor, you know, whether to be involved in force feeding is a very complicated one.
And just to give some more respect to fellow talk show host Joe Madison, his show is on Sirius XM Urban View, and he started his hunger strike 8 days ago after the Senate failed to pass the voting rights legislation that it was considering, despite the support of Republican Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia. It still did not reach the 60-vote threshold. And he said, as a political protest, I am beginning a hunger strike today, that was 8 days ago, by abstaining from eating any solid food until Congress passes and President Biden signs the Freedom to Vote Act or the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. I repeat, just as food is necessary to sustain life, the right to vote is necessary to sustain democracy. So hunger strikes in the news right now from New York to around the country to around the world. We thank Sharman App Russell, who wrote about hunger strikes in her book, Hunger, An Unnatural History. Her latest book is Within Our Grasp, Childhood Malnutrition Worldwide and the Revolution Taking Place to End It. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.